Shall I kick us off then?
Sounds good.
Hello,
well, and hey!
Welcome everybody. Do we have a provision in the employee handbook for this?
I'm just kidding. I'm done
what
now.
Retribution am I allowed to take? Can we read over the criminal violence section one more time?
No. Okay, I'm done.
So hello and welcome to Deep Space Jukebox, yet another episode. What number are we on now? 47?
Six.
I'll take six. This is only my second one I've ever done, actually, then. Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, glad you're all here. Thank you for being here. Always a pleasure. Today, we are going to talk about the song Once Upon Another Time by Sarah Bareilles. Is it Bareilles? Am I getting that right? Like I always mispronounce. So I discovered this song through one Aaron Yonke. He showed it to me and he was like, I think you'll like this song. And I was like, you're right. I like this song. Very slow, really all the way through. Super slow start, kind of builds in the middle. But it's an emotional song. It's a beautiful song. It's one of those, it feels like a song to me that kind of forces you to be quiet and to ponder and just think. And, it's a very meditative song, I think is the word. So I love it for that reason. I don't listen to it all the time or anything, but sometimes when the mood strikes and when I feel like slowing down a bit, I will put this on and just kind of, you know, slow down. So, that's the song. I hope you all get a chance to listen to it maybe once or twice at least. And, I would love to hear what you all think.
Yeah. The only other songs I had heard from Sarah Bareilles were, Love Song and Brave, which were kind of the hits back in the day when I was in college.
She kind of had that like sudden peak at those during those years.
And this was way different because those are kind of like bouncy and glimmery pop anthems and
feel good.
You know, a lot of fun. And this one is very different. The vocalization is much more mature. It's more, I guess, womanly than youthful. It's got a lot of, like a sensibility of nostalgia about it. She's certainly looking back. I really like the pacing of it because it, like you said, it is slow paced, but it doesn't feel over long and it doesn't feel dull. There's enough tension in the song that you're kind of sitting on the edge of your seat waiting for the next, the next interval. So yeah, it was a really enjoyable listen and not at all what I expected.
You got to give credit where credit is due. I feel like she is very difficult as an artist to pull off a song like that when it's like so zoned in on one instrument, especially, and in this case, especially a voice, like, and she does an incredible job of that. Like I was really floored by that. I don't know why I immediately went to Bridge Over Troubled Water the minute I heard the opening lines. I don't know why. I'm not sure why, but it kind of reminded me of that a little bit, just in the sense of that, like it just like shuts you down immediately. It's really cool. And it's also just shows the professionalism of her as an artist. Like she's incredible. That's absolutely amazing.
Another thing that struck me halfway through listening was this feels really similar to the national anthem. And I was thinking, why? It's an a cappella vocalization. And then it's like a phrase and then a pause and then a phrase and then a pause and then a phrase.
I love it.
Interesting. Wow. I never would have thought of that.
They're nothing alike, but that's the only other song that I've heard sung with that same kind of vocalization.
Interesting.
I love it. I thought of Bridge Over Troubled Water and you thought of the national anthem. That's there's something
basically the same song.
Well, it's also kind of funny because I'm not a particularly patriotic person. So
yeah, but that's great.
I think you hit the nail on the head with the mature aspect, Andrew, where this feels like a full grown mature woman who is not trying to be all poppy and silly and fun and like just like it's somber. And I also love what you said, Rob, about it is so hard to pull something off like this with no other help besides just your voice. I mean, there's that one synth that supports her like halfway through, but the whole first almost half of the song is completely a cappella, and the end is as well. And it's like, yeah, you have to have a really, really, I think we've talked about this with one or two other songs we've had on here, is like, you have to be truly talented to do something like this and do it well. And man, I could listen to her all day. Like, she just got an amazing voice.
What did y'all think was the symbolism behind the candle being lit at the beginning of the song?
I don't know that I would use the word symbolism as much as a powerful setter. Like, when you envision her, just like, I don't know how often people try to envision a singer singing or where they are or what they're doing, but when that match strikes and you hear the candle flickering, that I see her like sitting cross-legged in a dimly lit room with that candle, and it's quiet. And that's such a, I don't know, it sets the tone of the song in a powerful way.
The song is about youth. It's about looking back on there's a sliver of youth where you have the freedom to go do whatever it is that you want, and you don't have the responsibilities that typically come with that. So she's looking back on that particular time with fondness. It's nostalgic. So a candle is something that's warm and fuzzy, but also like it's burning, it's hot, it's something dynamic, and it has a time limit. A candle burns out.
The song needs to be in a musical. I don't know what musical it's from. I know it's probably a musical that doesn't exist, but I feel like it is a number that I would see on stage. She's lit a candle. She's just like, she's at the darkest moment of her life, or like, I don't know what's happened in the past, or, you know, and I feel like that's, it's like her moment, you know what I mean? Like that's, it's so, and I think the candle like brings that out in a really cool way, where it's like, I want to get tickets and watch. Like, I want to see this on stage as part of a larger musical drama.
Well, so I'm like really glad you mentioned that, because, so the, between when she did, like Love Story and, some of the big hits of like the mid aughts, and now she's actually done a lot of work on Broadway. She did the music and the lyrics for Waitress, which is one of the biggest Broadway musicals of, I think it came out like 4 years ago, 3 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And it's powerful. Like she had, I think it was a movie that she adapted to a musical. But there's, some of the songs in it have the same type of tone. Even like, I think it was an album or two ago by her, she did a song called Manhattan. And that's one of my favorite songs to play on the piano, because it, it's so haunting. And I've never been in a breakup before, but listening to it, it sounds like it feels like death. Like, it's the most like painful song about a breakup that I think I've heard in a long time. And it's like the sense that she has with how music and her voice go together. Like, I feel like she's really figured that out, to the point where like in this song, she just flat out doesn't have music for half of it, because she knew that her voice could work in that setting. And then the music that she brings in is really stripped down and kind of haunting still, but almost like a Walt Disney kind of bounce to it, especially like the Once Upon Another Time piece throughout.
To piggyback off what you were saying, Aaron, just about her absolute confidence, the way she approaches a song, you can tell she's completely confident. This doesn't feel like a play for any kind of hit or, you know, money or anything else. Like, it just feels like a true, genuine song. And I think one thing that serves that, one of the first things that I fell in love with after having heard it a couple times, this is something that I find myself increasingly admiring in music. When an artist breaks away from the verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, like that's just in every song. And that's a format for a reason. It works. But like, I find it increasingly refreshing when someone just sings a song, whatever they want, the whatever way they want. And it doesn't mean no structure. It just means a different structure, like whatever serves the song. And I think a verse, chorus, organization wouldn't serve this song as well as what she came up with. It just feels, because it feels so ponderous and so emotional that it just, and I think it adds to that confidence level where she didn't need to stick to a formula. She just sang it the way she felt like it needed to be sung. And I love that.
Yeah. There's a song that I introduced, either Andrew introduced it to me or I introduced it to Andrew. I can't remember. But it's This Year by the Mountain Goats. I feel like this is the exact same song as This Year, except it is like the exact opposite tone. Because the whole, like, the song begins by saying, I broke free on a Saturday morning. I put the pedal to the floor, headed south on Mills Avenue. And listen to the engine roar. And then the whole song is like, my broken house behind me and good things ahead. A girl named Kathy wants a little of my time. Six cylinders underneath the hood, crashing and kicking. Listen to the engine rhyme. And so like the whole song is like getting out, going like that, like Andrew said, that sliver of youth where you can do that. But man, is it such a different tone.
It's manic. This one is meditative. The Mountain Goats one is manic.
Yeah. and like kind of weaving in, Jonathan, what you were just saying, like it, that one kind of messes with the verse, chorus, rhythm too, where it doesn't have a chorus. The only thing that could be considered a chorus is him saying, I'm going to make it through this year if it kills me. And he says that like 12 times throughout the song. And then he just jumps right back into the verse. There's kind of a lot of like correlation between those two.
I love it.
There's a band called Future Forestry that did a series of EPs about travel called the Travel Series. And Travel 3 is about road travel. And we were chatting about some songs on that last week. And the thing that is common in all those songs is momentum. But they achieve it through like these huge soaring melodies and driving drums and stuff like that. And it's interesting that the frame device in those songs is the same as this one. It's like a road trip. You're on a highway driving into the sunset. But the methodology for evoking that is just so different. You know, it's not that kind of driving punchy or like with the Mountain Goats. It's not a manic, you know, pedal to the metal kind of song. The methodology is very much like drawn out, slow, meditative, expansive. It's just interesting how you can have the same lyrical frame device for a song, but have completely different musical methodologies.
Mm. That's good. Love that.
I love that. I was thinking about that. She's got phenomenal lyrics too.
Yeah, she does.
I mean, just really, you know, emotive turns of phrase, you know, I mean, like pulled at my heartstrings in a really cool way. Like I thought that was awesome.
It doesn't feel emotionally manipulative. It doesn't feel like she's just trading on tropes to get a reaction.
Yeah, no, yes. Not at all.
It does it. What I feel like it's like, show don't tell, because she's listing things that have emotional resonance and are vivid. Like the descriptions are vivid. She talks about yellow lines, Buckley on the radio, the sun sinking low. Like it's like painting a picture and you kind of fill in what the emotion would be for that scene. But it's not hard to do that because the music is kind of, or lack thereof, is like filling that in for you.
Yeah, I love, there's so many clever ways in which she gets ideas across. Like, before I knew which life was mine, it's a clever way of saying I didn't know who I was yet. But that's such a beautiful way of saying that. Mm-hmm. And like, again, like somebody's hands who felt like mine. It's like that memory of like, that was me, but it feels like a different person.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting. Huh.
Did you interpret that differently?
I've pictured this song always with two people.
Really? Her as a child.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
I always see it as one. Like, it's her talking to her younger self, or like, mm-hmm. Thinking back to her younger self.
That's where I was is beautiful because I was free. When you're a child, you feel, it's funny that we look back on childhood and feel like it was freedom, because it was just a lot of restrictions, actually. Really, I guess it depends. But like, I mean, you were told what to do. You couldn't do anything on your own. And yet we look back at childhood, we're like, oh man, I could do whatever I wanted. That's what it feels like, you know?
Yeah.
But I think that's what she's talking about. Like, there's this narrow slice at the end, at least in North America, at the end of childhood, but before adulthood, where, you know, you have your license, but you don't have any adult responsibilities. And, you know, you could conceivably jump into your car, or I guess it sounds like maybe she's on a motorcycle and just drive off into the sunset.
So that was the next thing I was going to say, is the first few times I heard this song, I imagined her as a young girl of maybe 8 or 10, because I mm-hmm. thought she's taking a drive in the car at the beginning with an adult. And then she's on her bicycle later, like riding down the street. Like, cause that was the car, whenever you think I turned the key and took a drive, it's like, oh, she's in an old pickup truck maybe. And then in the sun-kissed skin and handlebars, I see a little girl on a bike. But if you put it all together, you see a teenager on a motorcycle, because there's no break.
Yeah.
Like she's talking about, I turned the key, took a drive, radio's on, cigarettes burning. Hopefully she's at least a teenager. Yellow lines, like 18.
Yellow lines
tire marks, and then handlebars. And it's like, oh, that is a motorcycle, I think.
So the tone of the song strikes me, because I have a similar experience. In 2012, I went and worked in Colorado at a summer camp doing site design for them. And I drove, like, I left home and I packed all of my architecture gear, all of my sound equipment, all of my camping gear, and all of my climbing gear into a 92 Honda Accord and drove to Colorado for the summer. And, you know, met a couple guys up there at the summer camp, and we would drive around Colorado on the weekends doing all sorts of crazy stuff. But it was very much that feeling, like my entire life was packed into a 92 Honda Accord. And, you know, I could conceivably dirt back around Colorado for the entire summer without too much trouble. And I really didn't want to go back to Texas because it was 105 there. And so wasn't concerned about the porch light behind me. And that it was a really special feeling, because it was like my life was so lean at that point that my entire life could fit into a 92 Honda Accord. And that's a really compelling feeling for a 22-year-old person. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't last, you know, there's a timeline on that sort of freedom. And I think that's for the best, because that sort of freedom isn't, it doesn't bring out the noblest qualities in people. Because it's a selfish kind of freedom. It's freedom that's centered on me wanting to do what I want to do. So I think it's appropriate to enjoy that when you're in that time of life. But it's also appropriate for there to be a sunset on that time period.
That's how I wonder, like, lyrically, like, so using Once Upon Another Time as a sort of like hearkening back to this nostalgia of what once was, and like, you know, it's sort of like, oh, it was this magical land that I'll never return to. Like, it's one, you know, I mean, like that once upon a time for that, you know, and where you're young and you have this freedom that you just don't have anymore. And, but then like that deciding nothing good and dying line, like, I'd just be interested to get y'all's thoughts on that. Cause I was wondering, did she just like immediately turn everything on its head and say like, hey, that was super meaningless. Like that time was, I thought it was magical, but it was just a waste.
I would describe her outlook, her view of her childhood, if you could describe it in one word you could use, I think would be fond. I think she looks on this time fondly. I think that's pretty safe to say. But then if that's suicide coming in all of a sudden, then I am confused there. Like, why?
I don't. So where are y'all reading that? Because
it's the third to last line.
It's like,
well, no. So I know where the line is. I'm asking like where in the meaning? Because the way I'm reading that is like she's saying that there's nothing good about dying, deciding nothing good in dying. Like she doesn't think
dying that would like good. That'd be like if I came to work and y'all asked how I was and I was like, I've decided it's not worth dying. How are you guys doing?
Okay. That's not how I'm reading
that's
it.
That's how I read. I mean, how do you read it?
Like there's nothing redeemable about the idea of death, like to live life fully, to be so soaked up in the moment that all you want to do is live. Like, how can there be anything good about death is kind of what I see her saying. That's why she said, so I would just keep on driving because I was free. Driving.
If you've decided there's nothing good about something, that means you've considered that option. Like, I've considered dying, and you know what? There's nothing good. I think I'm not going to do that. But that means you were considering it, which if you're considering dying, that's suicide. Like, that's what that is.
No. Well,
or no, not, yeah, not you're killing just, yourself.
Yeah. You're just realizing, like, I'm young. Mortality. But one day I die. Like, I feel like that's what also happens in this season. It's like you have freedom, but you also consider the fact that, like, death may feel far away right now, but it won't be for long. And so she's just like, I don't know what that's going to look like, but I know it's not going to be good. So I'm just going to keep on driving.
Okay. I can see that.
Late teens, early 20s is the first time that most people honestly start to grapple with mortality. And the people who choose not to grapple with it have the immortality complex and do stupid stuff. But the people that do grapple with it, you know, you actually have to stop and think about death. And I think, you know, 19, 20, 21 is the first time people usually honestly do that. I mean, people that's do that in high school, but they're the weird kids.
Yeah. The mascara.
Well, and I think the other way you could look at it is the idea of, like, when we leave that, sometimes when you leave that stage where it's when you're totally free, it's also all about you. So having responsibility to someone else is a way that you really die to yourself. And so it could be her, you know, going back in her mind and saying, you know, there is nothing good about essentially like dying to this life, like to this way that I'm doing things. So I'm just going to keep being free, you know? So in a way, like exalting that existence of absolute freedom. So there is no redemption from that. It's not, you know, and there's no need for it because she wouldn't even say it would require a redemption, but it's just she's achieved that ultimate goal of total self freedom and fulfillment as a child, you know.
That makes sense. I will say that suicide certainly does not fit tonally. So what y'all are saying does make sense.
Okay. But no, I thought the suicide route first too. But I think part of that, honestly, now that we're talking about it, like as I'm processing it, I think part of that is because we've all had those moments where you see that and, you know, like you go back to, oh man, it was so cool to be in my 20s or, you know, where I was living free. But it's like, I look on that time as like, when I look at where I am now, and yes, there's more responsibility, but there's also so much more joy and like depth, passion and, you know, just like depth of experience. And there's nothing against anyone in their 20s. Sorry. Sorry, Aaron. And it's not that. It's not even like an age thing. It's more of like a, where is my heart? And it's like, you know, I was even reading in scripture this morning, just like he who looks for, you know, who tries to save his own life is going to lose it. And so I kind of see it from that angle. And so in my mind, I think that's probably why I interpreted that lyric as being like, surely there must be some way that she's seeing that that's not all there is. Like, that's not the exaltation we should be looking for, you know? At least in my perception.
One of my favorite quotes from The Office, and it's actually for The Office being a comedy, it's a fairly serious quote. It's when Andy Bernard says, "I wish there was a way to know you were in the good old days before you left them." And I think that's such a good lesson on, like, man, like, savor the moments you're in. Know they're not going to last forever. Know you'll move out of them and change, but you'll have those memories. And just having that healthy perspective on, hey, live in the moment and appreciate it and remember it, and then appreciate it when it's gone. But then enjoy the next one instead of looking back and saying, oh, I wish I was 25 again, you know?
I think that's the balance that this song strikes, is she's not pining to return to the days of youth. She's just looking back with fondness on, you know, what it's like to feel young and free.
That's interesting though, because I wonder if it's not it felt kind of pining to me.
Well, it was fond, but I don't think it didn't strike me as like a desperate attempt to reclaim the youth, you know?
Yeah.
I would agree for the most part, the only line that could be damning there is I was free. Meaning I'm not free anymore. Right. And that's kind of a fatalistic view. Like, I mean, I used to be free. Well, that's the thing. I feel like it's a little rose tinted. It's the whole grass is green on the other side of the fence kind of thing. Like, we're always bound to responsibilities. It's just for different reasons. Before, people made us, and now we make ourselves. But I still overall do agree with you, Andrew, that I don't think she's like depressed. This isn't a depressed song. She's just, she is remembering fondly. At least that's how I feel about it. That's just the one line where I'm like,
I gotta see the musical. I don't know.
So I love, one of my favorite parts of any of these discussions we have is when we like pick a line that seems unclear and we talk about what it could mean. And we did that with the dying line. The one that I really want to talk about is no porch light on to pull me home. I've kind of like thrown some theories around in my head, but I feel like I'm not confident what she means when she says that. What do y'all think?
So it could be like she got kicked out and is not welcome back. That's the dark version. Or the other version is like, there's no expectation that she will return home. There aren't strings attached. There's not a tether back to where she grew up. And I think she's contrasting that to where so she's not at home. She's somewhere else. No porch light to pull me home. And where I was is beautiful. So she's not at home. There's nothing pulling her back there. And she's just reveling in the beauty of the place that she's at.
I think I had like this sense back in like 2019, 2020, where when it was just me, like where I wasn't coming back and Rachel was at my apartment, that
when you were free.
No.
You know what I mean?
That's not what I was saying.
Your old ball and chain, you know what I'm saying?
Rachel and Rose doesn't mean she hates this song.
No, like when she wasn't over and I would literally get up in the morning on like Saturday at 5 a.m. and I'd drive to White Rock Lake and stay out there until 10 when Half Price opened. And then I'd drive to Half Price Books, stay there for an hour, go get coffee. And like the sense, it's funny just because I've never put it like this, but like it really felt like my center of gravity was wherever my feet were standing because there was no one home. And so I just ended up like, if I wanted to, I could have gotten the car and driven off. And it's like, it's just my stuff I'm leaving behind. Like, it doesn't really matter. But if there's a person there, then that's suddenly like a lot different. And that's been something that shifted for me is like, even if I've like the amount of times this summer that I fantasized about getting in a car and driving as far away from the godforsaken heat as I can, as fast as I can possibly go. Like, I've lost count, but like, I don't do that because like Rachel's in DFW. Cause even like DSR, like whether I'm here or not, like I just go remote. Like Rob would probably be really frustrated, but like at the end of the day, I just switched to being remote and it's like, great. Like I'm already remote 4 out of the 5 days. So
you would have an enemy to call your own, Aaron.
Right now, even sitting in this room in Dallas, I feel like my center of gravity is up in Denton. It's not on my feet anymore.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that's a good thing or a bad thing?
Oh, I love it. I love it. It changes the way that I live life. Like it restricts me in a lot more ways than I, and I'm still getting used to that. Like I have to think differently and I have to remember that what I can do doesn't mean like the list of what I could do is not what I can do necessarily. There's maybe a better way to say that, but
it's the beauty and the challenge of moving from independence to
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, it's a great feeling.
The other interesting thing I think about that line, no porch light on to pull me home, is she's pulling out the big guns. Like she's pulling out some of the most compelling archetypal images of a home place, mm-hmm. like the front porch. And she's saying, you know what? I'm not going to artificially downplay how compelling home is. I'm going to pull out the big guns and make home seem like a compelling place and then say, but where I was beautiful. It was even better than that. Have you guys heard Front Porch by Joy Williams?
Uh-huh. Where is my, so. What you looking for?
Yeah.
I was actually thinking about that when Jonathan mentioned the front porch.
And that's a song that uses the same metaphor of the front porch as like, this is what you're coming home to. It's a place of stability and certainty, and it's always there for you. It's a backstop. So that's something very comfortable. And so putting that as the foil to, well, right now I'm on an adventure and I'm free. I think it's a really compelling contrast.
Well, and I think I hear it also as a sign of a healthy relationship. So it sounds to me like she's a young adult. She's still living at home. She's out having adventures, but her parents trust her. Like it's the porch light isn't on to pull me home, but she's still welcome home. I would imagine they're just not like, where were you? You know, because I feel like I had that similar, like very brief period of my life where like I was still living at home. I was working a full-time job. I had lived in an apartment with a buddy for a year, but I'd moved back and I offered I was like, hey, mom and dad, I will pay rent here. Like I'm not going to reload. And they're like, no, save your money. It's fine. So they were gracious about it. But it was one of those things where it's like, as long as I kind of checked in once in a while, so they knew I was alive, I could kind of come and go as I please, whenever I want, as late as I want. And there was a freedom where it was like, I'm a single dude doing whatever I want. And and I'm welcome at home, but they're not like pulling me home. Like, where are you?
Yeah. Man, I still feel like this song is about her and another person.
Yeah. Hey, unpack how that, do you Aaron. Get that?
I want to hear this. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear that.
So part of it, I think, is I did the same thing you did, Rob, when I first heard this, where I pictured her singing the song in like a specific context. And it was, unsurprisingly, at someone's deathbed. Because that's
you think every song is at someone's deathbed.
I listened
to Go the Distance, and he's like, "Yeah, man, I picture Cake with his keytar at the deathbed,
put in the grave."
You went the distance, man.
So, like, I picture like at like her singing to someone as they're dying about a happy memory that she has. So she's still like early adulthood, like maybe 30, 40, thinking back on her 20s and singing to someone that's in their 90s, about what it meant to be alive, like a happy part of life. And, there's a naivety in the song, and there's a spring awakening kind of feel to it, that the missing component to me has always been like, there's someone that's guiding her through this process. And I don't hear it necessarily in the words, other than that part of like someone's hand who felt like mine. I've just kind of hooked that into someone that was so close to me that they felt like me. They felt like my own hands, my own body. But like that alone isn't it. I think it's just the idea of going out late at night with someone that hooks my brain more than a song about kind of reliving the nostalgia of youth. Because I think it is that one.
The one line that kills it for me, that kills that theory for me, is like, before I left the child behind me. Unless she's leaving a kid on the side of the road, I think it's her.
Well, no. So like, before I left the child behind, I hear that as innocence, like a euphemism for innocence. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
So like, there's someone with her that's guiding her from the process of being a child to being like a young woman. And, like cigarettes, like I picture cigarettes and I'm like, there's a guy in like a leather jacket and she's living in like Malibu at the time as like a young teenager. And he's like, hey, like, maybe he's a high school senior or something. Like, let's go cruise the mountains of Malibu. And this is the song that like captures that memory as she's looking back in like mid-30s.
I kind of like it. I never thought about visualizing whoever's singing this song in the context of someone else too. You know what I mean? Like, I do think, I think that's kind of, that kind of adds some cool depth to it, you know?
Well, in either way, I think she is singing about somebody else. It just happens to be a different version of herself. And
yes, Aaron's exactly. That's the somebody's like, hand.
It's like a completely different individual I don't know. We're back to the ship and its constituent parts problem. Like, if every part of you has changed, are you still actually the same person? In design, there's an idea of object and field, or figure and ground, white space and content, that sort of balance between what's empty and what's full. And I think musically, this song leverages the empty space to great effect. And it's not just empty space, it accentuates the parts where there is music. So a lot of popular music is all out all the time, and that can be really fun and engaging. But at the end of the day, there's no contrast between what was quiet and what was loud, because it's all loud. So having the voids there to accentuate the presence is something that this song does really well. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I thought was interesting, and you mentioned this, it doesn't have a traditional structure like first chorus, bridge, chorus. There is some poetic structure to it, but it does have a microstructure. So it has that kind of descending interval, then up, I don't know, a major third, and then the same descending interval, and then again and again. So the tune repeats itself. So there's a microstructure even within. And then the other interesting thing I thought musically was the thing never resolves until the last note. It goes da 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 da. Like, it always like jumps into the next iteration every single time. And there are a couple like false there's a couple times where she like holds it out and it's like, I'm gonna resolve it. Nope, we're going again. And then that last one, because I was free, like, she finally resolves it at the end of the song. So I think that
it feels like lapping waves to me.
Yeah. It's like, it's cyclical. It's got momentum, even though it's slow. And even though there's empty space in the song, it keeps the momentum through that never resolving until the very, very last. I noticed after living in Vermont, we don't have cicadas in the summertime. Like there aren't bugs that buzz all summer long in the night.
Wow.
It's really quiet at night in the summer. There are some crickets, but it's like peaceful and quiet. And so like that second stanza where that clav, that kind of reedy clav comes in, like, and it sounds kind of like cicadas in the background, kind of like a hot summer night.
Oh, I kind of love that.
That's such a Texan thing. I'll be darned.
Like, but you know, I never thought to make that connection, but I really like that.
Well, this has been a fascinating discussion. Thank you all for your wonderful thoughts. It is time to put it to a vote. Between one cicada and 10 cicadas, how would you rate this song?
So I did say earlier that I thought it was very well done, professional, super cool.
But it's a two.
But I give it a six. Okay. Yeah, it's good, but it didn't like, I wasn't, right. I'd probably stick it at a six. Six cicadas.
I'd say seven. I agree with Rob. I think it's a well-executed song. I think it's a very well-crafted song. I think the workmanship just in the lyrics and the delivery is fantastic. I'm not really well in touch with my emotions, and so I have to use music to kind of figure out how to feel about things. And so this is a really nice song to help me understand how to feel about that special time in youth.
I would probably say six. I want to give it a seven. It's almost more of a compliment to her that it's such a good song, and I think it's one of the weaker ones that she's done as an artist. I've had a lot of time to like have love-hate relationships with it, that it's kind of evened out to about like a six in my head.
I think I'm a seven. And actually, I kind of expected to give it a higher score. But honestly, I think it's like what Rob said, and maybe that it's banjo. Like I'm not going to listen to this song very much. Like, I love it. And when I'm in the right mood, I'm like, I don't want to hear this upon another time, and I'll do it. But this isn't going to be like my jam, you know, it's just not. Two sevens and two sixes. Not bad.
Hey,
I wonder what our first 10 is going to be.
Yeah. I think we've already had a 10 before.
What was it?
I thought I gave a 10 on Andrew's song.
Did you give a 10 on Samson?
Well, because I was debating it because I was like, I don't want 10 to be something that like I never give any song, but I don't want to give it to every song because so like it has to have significance, but for it to have significance, it also has to be used.
Like so nuclear weapons.
Oh, no. Don't. Edit that out.
Oh, well, gosh. On the note of nuclear weapons, everybody, let's end it. Anyway, you guys have a great weekend. I will say, I'll end it on this note. I'll get all sentimental here first. It is such a pleasure to do these podcasts with y'all and just to work with y'all. I think each one of you is someone I admire and love as a friend. Impacted my life, and I just love anything I get to do with y'all is a treat, and that includes this podcast. So,
could not agree more. Thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you, Jonathan.
This is Once Upon Another Time by Sarah Bareilles.
Once upon another time, somebody's hands who felt like mine turned the key and took a drive is free. Highway curve, the sunshine glow. Buckley on the radio. The cigarette was burning slow. So just yellow lines and tire marks and sun-kissed skin and handlebars. And where I stood was where I was to be. I'd make my way.